Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. I'm joined today by our regular contributors, Joan Ocera with the New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. And it's looking like there could possibly be some big changes coming to the media world. Rupert Murdoch, who you might say is kind of starring in his own Fox reality TV show, The Last Media Mogul Standing, has bid $80 billion to buy Time Warner. And while the offer was rejected, it doesn't mean that this is the end of the story. If Murdoch were to succeed, he'd wind up with movie and TV studios like Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox, and perhaps what he's really after, HBO. So, Joe, Rana, why do this merger?
Well, you know, size matters these days. You know, the cable space has already consolidated. There are big giants out there in the internet world like Amazon and eBay and Google. And I think that content creators increasingly feel like they want to have size. Now, the question is that a smart strategy? And I think it's a big question mark. You know, I mean, I frankly don't understand how getting bigger as a content company, while it may improve short-term negotiations with cable companies and internet providers, and people that own the pipes in general, how it's going to actually change the business model in the next 5 or 10 or 20 years for media.
Well, it's probably not going to change the business model, but hey, this is Rupert Murdoch we're talking about.
Well, that's a question. Is this just
go
more about...
Go big or go home.
is this more about Rupert Murdoch and him being this mogul? I mean, really, he's in a way like the last of a generation.
He is. At the tender age of, I believe it is, 83.
Exactly.
But, you know, he has a voracious appetite. And the last time he did a big deal when he bought Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal, people said that that was going to be the capstone of his career. But obviously it's not. He's been through a very low with the hacking scandal in Britain. And now I think he's feeling his oats again. And in a sense, when he's feeling good about himself and feeling good about his company, this is what he does.
It's interesting, too, because there's a lot of mergers going on, not just in media, but in general. We're in a real merger mania, and those tend to happen, as has many of Rupert's biggest deals, at the peak of a market. You know, this is when companies have a lot of money to play with. They're also maybe tapped out on kind of real underlying growth. They're looking for ways to push up stock prices. It's interesting. I mean, Time Warner stock is up about 15% since this was announced.
So who is this merger good for, though? I mean, will it really benefit those people who own shares in 21st Century Fox and in Time Warner?
Well, first of all, we have to keep in mind that as of this moment, Time Warner has said they're not merging,
right,
and that they walked away from the offer. So let's keep that in mind. But it also probably means that Time Warner is in some ways in play. And if there are going to be big winners here, it's going to be the Time Warner shareholders who are going to get a very nice premium for their stock.
If a merger were to happen with Murdoch and with Time Warner, that would be good for Time Warner shareholders. But part of this concern is who actually controls the company, because the Murdochs have, you know, there's a different class of voting shares. Is part of the issue here that this is a very media way of trying to control their companies, that they have these non-voting shares that is given to everybody else and they keep it themselves?
That is true. Rupert Murdoch controls 21st Century Fox, you know, with something like 38% of the voting shares, but most everybody else has non-voting shares, and they're offering Time Warner shareholders, if they do get to that point, they will be offering them non-voting shares. Now, the truth is that a lot of the shareholders for our big institutions that own both of these companies. Mm. And they don't seem to mind that much,
right,
that they have non-voting shares.
The street loves mergers. You know, big institutions love mergers because they almost inevitably push up stock prices in the short term. But you ask, who is this good for? It's good for shareholders in the short term, not necessarily even in the longer term.
So that begs the question, when you think about Time Warner, they had a horrible acquisition. That would be AOL.
Right.
So they got really big, and now Jeff Bukas, the CEO, has been trying to make them smaller,
right,
and more nimble and lean. So is this one of those, that what goes up must come down? Are we seeing just a building up bigger and then eventually gets broken down again?
The AOL merger was completely idiotic, especially in the way it valued AOL itself. And, you know, this merger, if it were to happen, would take two comparable companies that basically do the same thing and meld them together. It would not be speculative in the sense that the AOL-Time Warner merger. So it wouldn't be, even if it did not turn out well, it wouldn't be the disaster that AOL Time Warner was, which I think to this day ranks as the worst merger maybe of all time.
No, I think that that's right. It wouldn't be a disaster. But the question is, you know, what are the companies really and truly getting out of it in terms of value? It doesn't change the way either of them do business. It doesn't, as I said, it change fundamentally how they're competing in a space that's really evolving and in some ways favoring giant sort of mega companies, but in other ways favoring firms that are very small and nimble, can really meet the consumer where they are and engage with them and provide them content in the way that they want to see it.
Well, finally, let's look ahead to some of the other stories we're watching. Rana, what's on your radar?
So I am thinking about tax inversions, different than yoga inversions. These are actually mergers, in some cases buyouts, in which companies try and buy a piece of companies in places where they would have to pay less tax. So we've heard a lot about these recently. Pfizer, the big U.S. drug company, trying to buy AstraZeneca, which is a British company that would have allowed them to pay lower tax, move to a tax domicile where they pay less than in the U.S., Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary, recently gave a speech about these, saying that he would really like to see them ended. He'd like to actually increase the percentage of the company from 20 to 50 that you have to buy to make this happen, to make it harder. I'm very interested in how this is going to play out. I think that, you know, there's a lot of popular will to have some limits on this stuff. But unfortunately, politically, conservatives are holding out for broader-based tax reform. I think it's going to be a big battle.
Joe, what are you watching?
Soccer.
The World Cup is over.
Yes, it is. That's right. but it is certainly the first World Cup in my lifetime that was watched so avidly by Americans. And once again, it has caused marketers and others to wonder if this is soccer's moment. They've been saying this since Pelé came to play for the New York Cosmos in the 1970s, over and over, that Americans finally are going to get soccer and soccer is going to become a big business a la football and basketball. And maybe this will be the time.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and maybe even a soccer match here and there at WNYC.org. You can also take this program with you as a podcast, available on iTunes. Joan O'Sara with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.